Oh, look, a green light is flashing. It means I've got to go on now.
Picture this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience! Right, first up this week... First up this week, the medical experience. Now, this is the time of year when you start to hear this sort of thing non-stop.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, not too brilliant. I feel a bit flu-y.
Yeah, yeah, well, there's a bit of a bug going around. Yeah. Have you got a sort of, like, a nagging headache and you feel tired all the
time?
Yeah, I had that. It's just some sort of a bug.
Whatever you've got, it's always just some sort of a bug. And they've always had it as well. The best thing to do with people like this is worry them. Hi, how are you?
Oh, not too brilliant. I feel a bit flu-y.
Yeah, yeah, there's a bit of a bug going around. Have you got a sort of nagging headache and you feel tired all the time?
Yeah, that's right.
I think you've got a brain tumour.
Oh, right, yeah. I think there's one going round.
All through history, human beings have always suffered from illnesses, but the reaction is always the same. Ah, what ho, how goes, Sarah?
In faith, not too good. I think I've got black death.
Yeah, there's a bit of it going round, you know, yeah. I've had that. Yeah, have you got those kind of like huge pustules that weep?
Oh, yeah. I thought so.
That's definitely what I had.
Yeah. Did you get that sort of nausea and vomiting?
Yeah, it's black death. Have you had the coma yet?
Oh, yeah.
I had that. And then the convulsions and the agonising death.
Yeah. No, I haven't had that.
No, neither have I. It must be flu, then. In medieval times, the average life expectancy was much lower than it is today, and many diseases, which are now easily curable, were then fatal.
And finally tonight, Sir Richard of Leicester, the famous soldier and elder statesman, has died aged 32, after a long struggle against a slight headache. Meanwhile, King Louis VII of France has died aged 13. He was suffering from delusions and tried to remove his own appendix, thinking he was Doogie Howser, M.D. Now, gradually, humanity has eradicated many diseases through medical advances, such as penicillin, anesthetics, antiseptics, and the discovery of the X-ray. Now, it's interesting to note that the X-ray was discovered by a woman, Marie Curie. Had it been discovered by a man, its usefulness would probably have remained unrecognised.
Look, come here, see this amazing property of the gamma ray that I've discovered.
Ah, this could revolutionise science, just think of what it could be used for.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can see right through her dress.
Despite the grueling hours and long training, many people still want to enter the medical profession, attracted by its media image as portrayed in such masterpieces as Carry On Doctor. If only the NHS was really like that.
Order! Order!
Mr. Speaker, we shall be providing an additional £50 million in NHS funding this year, and this includes £10 million for large hypodermic syringes for Jim Dale to carry facing forwards when Hattie Jakes is bending over. Furthermore, we shall ensure that every hospital fruit bowl contains at least one lovely pair, in which case Barbara Windsor should visit, and I should say, Mr. Speaker, that under Labour, the resources allocated to training doctors to be able to say, oh, matron, was reduced by 60%.
Now, there's something a bit dubious about the ethos behind such programmes as Casualty and Jimmy's. Surely if hospitals are suitable places to provide entertainment, then TV companies should go the whole hog.
Oh, this is incredible. The team from Reading General have got their trolley through the reception. Down the corridor, but St. Thomas are catching up. Oh, through the double doors. They're neck and neck, and now they're into X-ray, and they've got to assess the damage. The Reading team are having trouble operating the X-ray machinery in their Humpty costumes. Now, how many gravestones can they get out of their patient in the 30 seconds remaining?
Kenneth Clark there. Now... One thing that does do the image of the medical profession no end of good is the behaviour of medical students. Now, the first thing that happens when you arrive at medical college is that each student is given a dead body to use for dissection. Now, anybody who's ever met anyone to do with the medical profession will know that these bodies are inevitably acquired under false pretenses.
Now, Mr. Harmsworth, this is the consent form for your grandfather's body to be used for medical research.
I see.
You understand before you sign what the terms of this form state?
Yes.
That your grandfather's body will be used in the training of anatomy and for purposes of medico-pharmacological research.
Yes, yes.
And also that at the end of term, bits of him will be left on the bus seats for an hour. And that he may be wheeled around hospital corridors with a funny hat on as part of our post-exam celebrations.
That's what he would have wanted. Whenever you see medical students in the street, it's always incredibly worrying when you think just what these people are going to end up doing.
It's touch and go. If Dr. Michelson operates in time, we may just save him. Are all the tools sterilized? Check the respirator. Check the respirator. Prepare to make the first incision. Here comes the doctor now.
Who wants to buy a rag mag? Come on, hurry up. I'm on a pub crawl. I'm not operating till you buy a rag mag. Come on, it's for the scanner appeal. Oh.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
And now, the having workmen in experience. The first anxiety with having workmen in is not knowing what they're talking about.
Well, it's your crappy valve, isn't it? And that's clearly led to an airlock in a pump and boiler. That's bunged up your overflow pipe and the whole system's gone into underdrive.
I see. And that's why you can't fix the blind.
The second problem is that they just can't mend what they've come to mend.
Well, I could do it, but it would mean I'd have to rewire the whole place, and I'd have to knock down that wall, take up the carpet, take the roof off, demolish that block of flats over there, reverse all the human rights legislation passed in the last 45 years, trace the surviving members of the New Seekers, and become a Buddhist.
Well, I only asked you to pull your trousers up over your arse.
Yeah, a lot of plumbers in particular seem to think that the only qualification they need to have is being working class, being able to make you feel shifty in your own house. I just feel very violent when the plumber says, as they always do...
I can't work out what the trouble is.
Oh, that's all right. I really only wanted someone to come round and stink my house out for 50 quid. You must come round again, perhaps with some really cheap aftershave which you won at the fair, having spent 3 hours on the coconut shy trying to convince your kids that you're not sad.
Pornography suggests that plumbers are always getting their end away in private houses. This can only be based on an unrealistic conception of plumbers. Really, the average plumber's story in Razzle should read like this.
Imagine my surprise when the plumber arrived. He was the ugliest man I've ever seen. But then, instead of fixing the sink with his big bag of tools, he said, I haven't got the right sort of washer, and left.
The third problem is that they have to tell you that everything else in your house is also broken or rubbish.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Who put that fuse box there? That'll never do. Oh, look, that joist's all wrong. What else? Oh, yeah, your stereo's crap. Yeah, and your wife's a bit of a dog. You know that photo of your mother on the mantelpiece?
She looks like a right whore. Yeah.
And it really stinks in here. Oh, no, that's me. Basically, your whole life is rubbish. That'll be 200 quid.
And the fourth problem revolves around the question of tea. Should you offer the workman a cup of tea? Remember that if you do so, you will have to endure the ritual that all workmen have to go through on hearing the word tea.
Tea? Tea?
Is it my birthday?
Best drink of the day.
Long as it's hot and wet.
Get that kettle on.
The day I turned down a cup of tea, Norris McWhirter will want to know.
Right then, Fred, let's have a cup of tea.
Actually, I'd rather have a coffee.
Yeah, perhaps an Aqualibra. The other problem is what to say to the workman. The minute he strays off the subject of either the work in hand or tea, you get filled with a liberal terror that he's going to start talking about women or the blacks. And you have to agree with him, because partly because to bring him out of these attitudes would take, like, years of training and debriefing and re-education, all of which time he'd charge you for, and partly because you're frightened that otherwise he might beat you up. Sometimes you might even attempt to preempt him.
I notice you've got some West Indians living next door.
Yes, yes. Jungle bunnies, eh? Darkies singing and dancing all night. They all look the same to me.
My wife's a West Indian.
Could you please welcome Mark Hurst?
bit out of the paper. It's not particularly hilarious, but it's quite amusing. If you're interested in the Gulf War and all the espionage and developments that take place behind the scenes, this is out of the Guardian. Faced with a sticky problem of morale amongst its troops in the Saudi desert, the US Army's Research, Development and Engineering Center at Natick, Massachusetts, has called upon its vast research resources to develop the unmeltable chocolate bar. This not only... But conventional bars become soft when the temperature reaches 75 degrees and liquid in 120 plus heat of the Gulf. This not only annoys the troops, but their hands transfer goo to sensitive laser range finders and night sights. What the hell's going on? The whole thing's going to start up because some hyped up little GI shooting at a dime bar or something. What's going on? But this is even better, like, you know. But the Natick Centre is proud of one breakthrough. A bread bun which will not go stale for 3 years. There you go. Bloody picnic going on up there. How do they not know that they're developing Iraqi super bun? You know, they might have one of those. It's no war, not a picnic. The French are in with some Dijon mustard gas. It's really hot. Oh, I don't know. Went to the pictures this week, went to see Goodfellas. Anybody seen that? No. Great film. Hollywood's obsessed with gangster movies at the moment. I hope they're going to do a Christmas release of, like, Cinderella, but, like, How you doing? Does shoe belong to anybody here? Try on the shoe, you treats. Come on, try on the shoe. Don't, you get both feet in there, you fat faggot. Give me back, come here. What's your name? Cinderella. Try it on. Fits you? Okay, I'm going to get married now, settle down, I'll slap you around. Don't fool around. Okay, come on. Have you seen a prequel ever? This is a film that's it's like a sequel, but it comes out after the original to depict what happened before the original, as opposed to a sequel. They made one in the 70s called Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Early Days, and it flopped because it sounded boring. If they're going to make a prequel that's going to make money, it's got to sound interesting. Like, would you go and see The Railway Embryos? You would go up to them, wouldn't you? You want to know what happened there, you know? And all these disaster movies they have, which you can't relate to, being in a tower inferno and a plane on its way down. You want a disaster movie that you can look at and say, oh, God, that's happened to me. I know how that feels. The first time we made rice. Just a bleeding disaster. Too much of it. It's all stuck to the bottom of the pan, you know. But the other thing is, there's a film completely, utterly about dicks coming out. Now, this is interesting because all men, it seem to be, worry about the size of their willies. And it's silly. It's a silly willy worry. You don't need to do that. Ages ago, when the first condom thing started coming out, all the new ones, I saw a packet of condoms called Snuggers. The Snugger condom, which I thought, you know, well, they're all supposed to be snug. That's the idea. Like, you know, somebody somewhere marketing a really baggy one. You have to... Sorry about this, look. Keep pulling it up. Like, back up there. Have a condom with buttons on, have it as tight as you want, there you go. Little set of braces that fit round your testicles, there you go. That's where the women take control in bed, one false move, boy. Ah!
Right, we're on to the correspondence experience again. This is the bit of the show where we read out letters that we've had in from listeners in the week. Dear Hairy White House Experience, why do so many of Iron Maiden's songs sound like the theme tune to Rhubarb? actually, last week, as you might remember, we asked you to suggest alternative swear words or tell us what your favourite swear words are that we can actually say on the radio. But someone's written in and said, I don't have a favourite swear word. Instead of swearing, I just poke a pensioner in the eye with an umbrella. This isn't much help to you, but it's jolly good fun. Oh, I'll be one. This is from someone called Clark, no relation, Branner. Right. This is a good, I like this one. This is from Graham Armstrong, who lives in Bedlington, and he says, in your last show, you asked why the guy in the Halifax advert had put an empty milk bottle back in the fridge. The answer is, in case he wanted a black coffee. Excellent, excellent. Robert Huntley from Norwich says, there is a cigar advert in which a young couple visiting a safari park have their car vandalised by a group of baboons who steal the tyres to swing on. However, the credibility of the scene is destroyed by one irritating detail. The baboons pull the Wayne and Sharon type stick-on windscreen sun visor off the windscreen. So it must have been stuck on the outside. Everyone knows that the correct location for these windscreen sunglasses is in fact on a shelf in Halfords.
Right,
we want you to write in letters now. We want you to write in letters saying who you should think should be the leader of the Conservative Party and why. And if you could address your letters to the Mary Whitehouse Experience Paul Gascoigne competition, BBC London W1A1AA.
And now, the drugs experience. The government anti-drug slogan at the moment is drugs. The effects could last forever. Surely this should be drugs. The effects could last forever if you're lucky. It's like an advert for Duracell. No ordinary sulfate looks like it or lasts like it.
Another government slogan is, don't share your partner's works. Works. Surely the real danger is needles. The civil servants have just made up this word because it sounds sort of streetwise, like it was the one they came up with after David Waddington had had a go.
Let's see. Don't share your partner's gubbins.
So they start with works. As a result, there are now loads of heroin addicts who still share dirty needles, but adamantly refuse to lend out their copy of the complete Shakespeare.
Heroin has been isolated as the number one evil drug, despite the fact that the experience of coming off heroin is actually the medical equivalent of a slightly bad case of flu. But this wouldn't be so dramatic in the adverts. Instead of the kid standing wasted in an urban nightmare, they'd have to have him tucked up in bed with a thermometer in his mouth and a copy of Mayfair hidden inside Shiver and Shake.
And if it is like flu, in the next series of adverts, your mum would simply have to write a letter to school.
Dear Mr. Avery, Stephen has spent the last 2 weeks off withdrawing from heroin. But don't forget how he won the 100 metres in 4.5 seconds.
Also, why is withdrawal from drugs called cold turkey? Is it something to do with Bernard Matthews? Of course, you do spend a lot of time vomiting.
Heroin isn't as addictive as Valium. When a Valium addict's supply runs out, he can lose his job, his social life, and say the most extraordinary things.
It's a bit like a cricketer being sent out to bat.
But we must, of course, come out against drugs. Because I, for one, would never want anyone listening tonight to find themselves in a casualty ward late one night, looking a doctor in the eye and having to say, but we're her friends.
In fact, the real significance of that long stare the doctor gives her at the end of the advert is not, how can you possibly consider yourself any sort of a helpmate when this woman may be, because of your stupidity, about to die? But, sorry, what's a friend?
Presumably as well, this woman has been going around at the party she's been at, asking if anybody's got any drugs. Or any quack. I don't know how the dealer would have reacted.
Drugs. Quack. I'm sorry, love. I think you've taken enough. Maybe if we could get you an interpreter.
Well, hello and welcome to my quack new chat show.
Meanwhile, one has to consider how much of a friend this woman really is. Because not only does she allow her friend to overdose, she is quite willing to entrust her medically to the hitchhiker from Burt Lancaster's Foster's advert. So what she should be saying is,
hold on, you don't even know what an ulcer is and you're operating on my friend.
So what you have to consider is that the woman having her stomach pump's best friends are the worst liar in the world. Where'd you get the drugs?
The party. I don't know.
And a female Freddy Parrot-Faced David. No wonder she took a chuffing overdose. Anyway, when I was young, me and me mates used to spend a lot of time smoking ordinary household substances and convincing ourselves that they had hallucinogenic effects. I have in my time smoked jasmine tea, peppercorns and bran flakes and sat around saying, yeah, I'm getting a buzz, I am. But of course, real street heroin is not made out of ordinary domestic household substances. It's made out of Ajax. Acid, however, has led to some of the most famous pop songs of our time. Strawberry Fields, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and Working Man by Rita McNeil. And indeed, it led to the sight of Rita McNeil herself. Or that's what I thought when I first saw her on the telly. The 2,000 miners behind her, by the way, are needed to dig up enough coal to power her electric blanket.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds shows the creative magic of acid-induced lyrics in lines like, newspaper taxis appear on the shore. What was going on there?
Oh, no, mate, I'm not going south of the river in this weather. Oh, no, the motor will get all smudged and turn it to papier-mâché.
Loads of people took acid in the 60s, including a lot of people who now might seem extremely straight-laced. However, some of these people must occasionally still experience flashbacks.
So, my guests tonight are a huge melting telephone, a piece of Tanzania, and George Best. Oh, what's that on my head?
My husband and I would like at this time of year to extend our greetings to all members of the Commonwealth. The cameraman's turned into an elephant.
There is no doubt. I really want to be leader of the Conservative Party. And now the music experience. If music be the food of love, then Stock Aitken Waterman and McDonald's, and that bloke who sang Blue Velvet is a sort of old bit of cake that's been lying in the corner of the tin for 25 years.
The fact that Blue Velvet got to number one indicates one of the most irritating things about the charts at the moment. People won't buy a record unless they've heard it in an advert. One interesting aspect of this is that using a song in an advert means that people buy it who wouldn't have been seen dead buying it previously. The Steve Miller Band had quite deservedly not had a top 10 hit for 20 years. Until that bloke got his motorbike past reception and backed it carefully into the lift. And it's telling that a singer like Maria McKee can only get a hit by being on a rubbish film like Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder, in case you don't know, is basically Top Gun with stock cars. So next, there'll probably be an advert with a bloke grilling his hamburger by holding it next to an exhaust pipe.
However, since it's now obvious that you can't get to number one without a song from an advert, we can expect other bands to take note.
OK, let's run down the top five on this week's brand new chart. And number five, it's the Happy Mondays with their version of Their Tasty, Tasty, Very, Very Tasty. Number four, the Sundays, with their beautiful reworking of You Do the Shake and Vac and Put the Freshness Back. At three, no change, it's still Sinead O'Connor and Only the Crumbliest, Flakiest Chocolate. Open brackets, tastes like chocolate never tasted before, close brackets. At two, Adamski and We Are Lucky Cows, We Chew the Cud and Bran. But for the 6 week running, Britain's number one is still Now Hands That Do Dishes Are As Soft As Your Face with Mild Green Fairy Liquid from, of course, Public Enemy.
Allegations of Satanism in heavy rock are rife, conveyed in hidden messages, backward lyrics and brainwashing.
Now this has got to be utter nonsense. Heavy metal lyrics are backward enough anyway without this sort of thing. And in any case, this whole argument rests on the assumption that Satan, the ultimate master of absolute galactic evil, has nothing better to do.
Almighty Lucifer, Lord of Darkness, what evil plans do you have to enslave the human race into wickedness?
I have a plan. A plan of genius.
What is your plan, Almighty Lucifer?
I have a plan which involves getting some blokes with long hair and electric guitars to write some pop songs.
Yes, our master.
Well, then they record them and sell them on records to heavy metal fans, and they hear the coded messages when they play the records backwards.
Suppose they buy a compact disc.
I hadn't thought of that. Anyway, they are hypnotized by the lyrics.
But you can't hear the lyrics on those records.
No. But in my plan, all heavy metal bands write out the lyrics on the inner sleeve in really naff, pretend gothic writing. Just next to where they list all the different kinds of guitars and synthesizers they use and all the birds they were shagging when they were making the records.
And now the Gulf Experience, part two. Last week, as Tony Benn announced he's going out to meet Saddam Hussein, the cast of the show set off to Saudi Arabia to entertain the British troops. But no sooner had they arrived than they found themselves in an American base by mistake and face to face with...
Lieutenant
Vidal. Sassoon.
Oh no, it'll be 28 days in the cooler for us. This is a nightmare. Stuck in a prison cell with you, Shirley Bassey, Ronnie Corbett and Jeffrey Howe.
I'm sorry, David. I was just remembering the words of my heroine, Betty Boole. To sum up my feelings about Mrs. Thatcher. You are through and there's nothing you can do.
I know the chorus to that one. Gold finger!
Wonder what High Command want me to do with these people. Guess I better phone the highest authority.
So, Lieutenant Sassoon puts a call through to the President of the United States. Mr. Bush at that moment is out playing a pro-celebrity golf tournament. Himself and Cipriano Ballesteros versus Nick Faldo and Bruce Forsyth.
Hello, the President here. Oh, hi, Vidal. How's it going?
Portable phone.
Speak up, Vidal. Take your shot, savvy.
Oh, good shot. How's he scored, Miss Ford?
You've arrested who? Okay, if these guys are British, I'd better phone Margaret Thatcher and see what she wants me to do.
Hello, this is Michael Heseltine. I'm afraid Margaret isn't here at the moment. But please leave a message and I'll get back to you.
Meanwhile, somewhere in Baghdad, Saddam Hussein has already met Edward Heath and he's waiting to meet Tony Benn. MI5 suspect a link. The desperate tyrant wants to meet everyone who is an old Mike Yarwood impression.
Right, send in the next one.
Good evening. I think I've come through the wrong door.
What?
Oh, Saddam, look. The camel's done a whoopsie in your barrow.
Marvelous. Next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hussein. I'm very pleased to be here.
Yes, I have seen all your programs.
I'm sorry?
Yes, you know, you go along Festive Road into the little shop, and then you chain it to a suit of armor or something, and have an exciting adventure. Always an exciting adventure.
Oh, yes, I think you've got the wrong Mr. Ben.
And I love the way you always got changed without ever showing your underpants.
And tonight, in Baghdad, Saddam Hussein has issued an angry statement saying that he was misled by the British government and that he only allowed Mr. Ben into Iraq because he wanted to know how he got changed without showing his underpants. He has now demanded a summit meeting with Bagpuss, Captain Pugwash, and the cast of the Clangers. Also, in the Gulf, the team from the Mary Whitehouse Experience have been released from prison on compassionate grounds. Lieutenant Vidal Sassoon said Miss Bassey needed a perm and rinse. They are now on their way to British Forces HQ.
Oh, no. War's broken out.
Oh, look, Iraqi aircraft.
Oh, they're dropping bombs.
No, they're hamburgers.
No, they're not. Look, they're leaflets.
What does it say?
Hang on, let me look. Dear British Army, your country has failed to meet my conditions. I will declare war at noon tomorrow unless I have a personal audience with Captain Pugwash.
The heart is, let's hope. Let's hope for a negotiated settlement. All aboard the Skylark. Oh, no, that was Nair and Nelly. Was it the Black King?
Has the
arm
finally
that?
Flipped? Will Captain Pugwash succeed where Edward Heath failed? And will Shirley get her permanent rinse? Find out next week.
You have been listening to the Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Pucks, Hugh Dennis and Mark Hurst. The address for the Mary Whitehouse Experience Paul Gascoigne Competition is the Mary Whitehouse Experience Paul Gascoigne Competition, BBC Broadcasting House, London, W1A1AA. And the producer was Armando Iannucci.
To 99, Radio 1 FM.
Thank you to the White House crew.